Good morning, Larry Richard with Anchorman Paul Rasmussen. Let's start with a really important story. The state Supreme Court says counties cannot count undated mail-in ballots.
The Democratic majority boards in Montgomery, Philadelphia, and Bucks County have voted to count ballots without a date, saying the lack of one did not rule out a voter's eligibility. As of Monday, McCormick is leading Casey by about 17,000 votes.
News Radio KDK's David Balorado says it's a significant win for Republican Dave McCormick, who was declared the winner by the Associated Press in his U.S. Senate bid to unseat Democrat and incumbent Bob Casey.
And the AP calls races only when they believe the trailing candidate has no path to victory.
It should be pointed out, it is the Associated Press and not the United States government. So the process will continue in the recount. 11 lawsuits have been filed by Republicans to try to stop the recount process.
Temperatures in the Pittsburgh area above normal today. Maybe some afternoon rain showers, Larry, but stand by. Thursday and Friday, rain's going to turn to snow, especially up in the Laurel Highlands. And now we're talking about maybe 1 to 3 inches on Friday down here in Pittsburgh.
There you go. Time to panic. Get your toilet paper and milk. And on a really up note, last night, Pirates ace Paul Skeens capped a remarkable season by winning the National League Rookie of the Year Award for Major League Baseball. His reaction on MLB.
This is cool. And I think the coolest part is that it puts a bow on this past year. And you know, we can kind of look forward to next year.
A lot of people talking about that young man. And we're not done yet. There's a chance he could be named the Cy Young winner on Wednesday for being the best pitcher in baseball.
Yeah, Paul Alexander's report says there's an outside chance. I didn't think it was an outside chance. I thought I'd have a very good chance, but Paul follows these things a lot more closely than I do, so we'll go with that.
Regardless, this young guy has had a remarkable start, and Pittsburgh has taken to him. And last night he was on MLB doing the interview, and I mentioned earlier this morning that they had his girlfriend, the LSU superstar gymnast national champion, Liv Dunn, sitting next to her and never talked to her, never even said hello to her, which was odd. They were sitting on a couch, and there's a roaring fire in a fireplace behind them. And I thought that was strange.
Yeah, it was a little awkward, I thought, too.
But for those that don't know, Paul was at the Steelers game on Sunday, and they announced his presence, and the Steeler faithful went nuts for him. And I think it was cool to see the appreciation that he got. And he mentions that, and we'll have more on that coming up.
By the way, his demeanor in all of this interview last night on MLB Network, he had three people asking him questions from a remote studio. But the way that he handled himself, he was just really laid back and you know, very measured in his responses. He, you know, just doesn't keeps his head about him at all times, just like he does when he's on the mound. I mean, the guy's mentally strong.
He's 20. Do you have a signed rookie card of Paul Skeens? If you do, please call me. It could be worth, now they're guesstimating, $250,000. That's what one collectible shop is offering for it. That's just for starters. If you found the card, the Pirates also want to give you 30 years of free tickets behind home plate and a whole list of other goodies with it.
All over one card.
Including a meet and greet. Then his girlfriend, Libby Dunn, threw out there, yeah, and you can watch one of the games with me in the suite. And then I guess people are buying up all these card packs, right?
Yeah, in the hopes of getting one. Yeah.
It's autographed by Skeens. It's out there somewhere, but not necessarily here. This is around the country, right? It's a pack of Chrome Update Series cards now in stores. What a brilliant marketing move, because they're selling these things. They can't keep them in stock at places like Card Castle in Cranberry. It's kind of like the Wonka golden ticket.
No kidding. That's exactly right.
So,
hadn't thought about that possibility, but that's perfect.
And I'm guessing if one card company's offering, or one card shop, $250,000, it's worth more than that.
Sure, it's an investment.
So I may go out and buy a pack of those cards if I can find them somewhere. maybe find someone who doesn't live around here to go get him somewhere else and send him to you. This is what happens when you start scheming and then something goes awry. You got no chance. Hey, by the way, speaking of long odds, how about these odds? Somebody at the Steelers game, you know, they have the 50-50 raffle for charity. Mm-hmm. They had military charities earmarked because it was salute to service. Check this out. Pat, you'll love this. $182,000. And unlike the lottery, it's limited to the number of people in the stadium that bought the tickets. So the mathematical odds are a lot better. You still have to be the one. But imagine being in there. You get to see the Steelers win, and you take home half of $182,000. Somebody did that Sunday.
Slick.
Who is it? Call us immediately. And if you have that rookie card signed, please, 866-391-1020. We need to talk to you. Settlers Ridge, 2-7, along with Saloni's Bread, University of Pittsburgh Athletics, and we're collecting foodstuffs and supplies to fill our PGT trucking truck for the Greater Pittsburgh Community Food Bank. Haul to Pitt. You can go to kdkradio.com, but that's Market District. Can't miss it if you're in Settlers Ridge, 2-7 today and tomorrow. Had a good start yesterday and appreciate everyone who chipped in. Talking about the value of things that otherwise might not seem as valuable to others, like baseball cards, right? Well, we get that Paul Skene's card signed because of what they're offering would be really a nice get. What about Taylor Swift tickets? How about this? Aaron, in Toronto, they have gone into a custody battle. Two Taylor Swift tickets. They bought two seats, this couple, a year ago, but their love didn't last. And now they're in court battling over who gets the tickets. So the judge says, you have two options. Go together, sell the tickets, and split the money. But
simple enough.
They don't want to go together. And buying the other person's ticket isn't going to, I don't think, be feasible. You know what the seats are valued at now for these two seats?
$2,500.
$13,000.
Combined? Combined?
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, literally, that's unbelievable. Ridiculous.
How about Taylor Swift last summer ago, filling Acrisure?
Yep.
Two nights in a row.
Eras Tour.
I don't think, and she's still out there doing it. Plus, when does she have time to go to all these?
I know.
Chiefs
she's
games?
Like, she must be like Trump and barely sleeps.
I don't know, man. So be careful if you're buying tickets with your girlfriend or boyfriend for anything. If it's on the edge, you might not last. When is she going to be done touring?
You know, I have one of my closest friends. She is a Swiftie. Diehard Swiftie, and all I've asked her, hey, when is Taylor done? And she says she's not even sure Taylor knows. She's just international now. She's doing the international leg of the tour, going around different countries. And Taylor Swift is notorious for writing future albums while touring. She just doesn't stop.
Wow. But is she happy?
Good question.
This is the Big K Morning Show. Larry Richard with Anchorman Paul Rasmussen. Paul Skene's making news around baseball. No big shock, I guess, that he's National League Rookie of the Year.
This is really big stuff. When's the last time we had this kind of excitement about someone who's new to a team? Sidney Crosby would be, for me, one of those.
Yeah.
Maybe Ben Roethlisberger, although we really weren't sure, right, until he started playing.
Right, and then you kind of got the idea this is a special athlete.
Now, Hall of Famer, right?
Same thing when Mario Lemieux came
back
in the day.
Yeah, and I remember that.
And Paul Skene's last night interviewed Major League Baseball. One of the interviewees is also a Pittsburgher, Sean Casey, and his reaction to being named the Jackie Robinson Rookie of the Year in the National League.
This is cool, and I think the coolest part is that it puts a bow on this past year, and you know, we can kind of look forward to next year.
Paul, I'm from Pittsburgh, man. I live there now. I saw at the Steeler game, man, the crowd went absolutely nuts when you were waving that terrible towel. Can you just talk about what the fans have meant to you out there in Pittsburgh so far?
It's been awesome, and I think the coolest part about going to that Steelers game, a win was great, but just seeing the fans and seeing, you know, what sports mean to this city. Obviously, we saw it a little bit over the summer, but gives us hope, I think, to what we can do next year and have the city unite around us, you know, as the Pirates next year.
You talked about how this is kind of like the bow at the end of a great first year. How would you describe everything you've been through? First overall pick, you start the All-Star game, and now you're Rookie of the Year, you're a finalist for Cy Young. How do you put this into words, Paul?
It's cool, and I think the biggest thing is just, you know, stay present through it all. That's helped me this year. I've surrounded myself with good people, I think, and I've been super lucky to experience all the things that I have. So just going to try to continue to stay present and enjoy the ride.
Paul Skenes on MLB Network last night, seated next to his girlfriend, Libby Dunn, the LSU superstar gymnast, and she's back at LSU. And, you know, I guess they're exploring Pittsburgh when they can. By the way, they were on a couch together, a love seat with big roaring fire in the background. I just thought it was strange that they never referenced Libby Dunn.
Yeah, they didn't speak with her at all. She was right there.
She sat there. And
there were three different people questioning him
you think,
from the MLB studio. I don't know where this was, you know, the interview took place. I was curious to know. Was it here in Pittsburgh or down in Baton Rouge? What's going on?
I think it was. I think he's down in LSU. They had a party planned, too. Pretty exciting for him. And it's not over yet.
No, there's the possibility on Wednesday that he could be awarded the Cy Young for the National League.
So I'm trying to think, what Skenes debut patch card worth? This is off the Pirates website, because, you know, they offered all that. The 2024 Topps Chrome Update Series is where you're looking for this Paul Skenes ticket.
Now, this is a rookie baseball card that he has signed.
Correct.
And there's only one of them.
Yes.
Okay.
And you get, from the Pirates, two season tickets behind home plate for the next 30 years, a meet and greet with Skenes, two autographed Skenes jerseys, a softball game at PNC Park with coaching from Pirates alumni, a private tour of Pirates spring training, Pirates City, and Lee Park. And let's see, taking batting practice and warm up with the team. They keep adding stuff. And then his girlfriend, Liv Dunn, says, so you can watch a game with me in the private suite.
Well, I hope whoever gets the ticket is a huge baseball fan that wants a total immersive experience, because that's what it is.
This is that's really brilliant marketing, too, to stick a card like that in. Now they're buying them up as fast as humanly possible. So
I was looking at an article earlier today on the KDK TV website. Card shops can't keep up with demand for Skenes' rookie card. People are calling and flocking to sports cards and memorabilia stores looking for the one-of-a-kind card. Wow.
And if you do get it, please call us first, 866-391-1020.
I briefly collected baseball cards, you know, player cards, back in the day when I was a boy. And I noticed that the ones that came, you know, wrapped up with a stick of gum in there, the gum was always awful.
Oh, yeah, the gum was horrible.
It got to the point where you never even bothered with it.
Gum was like lightly sugared drywall, thinly sliced. But I think I had some really valuable cards and a shoebox, and at some point, Mom, you know, they were gone.
Yeah. So they interviewed, Channel 2 interviewed Jeff Patton, who has the baseball card castle up in Cranberry.
Right.
Says he's getting hundreds of calls a day about packs of Topps cards. He said if he had another 200 boxes, he could get rid of them with no problem.
Yeah, so good luck with that. But if you do win, please call us immediately. We need to speak to you. directly. Coming up, we'll get an update on this weather situation with possibility of some snow. And then the cabinet choice parade continues for President-elect Donald Trump. Well, weekend, we'll get you the details. Nearly 80 million Americans expected to travel over Thanksgiving. What was that? Planes, trains, and automobiles?
Wonderful.
And not so much boats. Meanwhile, President-elect Donald Trump, speaking of Thanksgiving, is expected to have his cabinet nominees set before the holiday. And with the details of the challenge of one, CBS's Jared Hill.
Trump's pick for attorney general could test his sway over the Senate. A lawyer for two women who testified before the House Ethics Committee says the panel has Matt Gaetz' Venmo and PayPal transactions allegedly showing payments for sex. An official with Trump's transition calls the claims baseless.
President-elect Donald Trump is on a fast track to staff his administration. According to sources, he's aiming to announce all cabinet-level
picks. Good morning, Larry Richard with
Banker
Man Paul
Monday,
Rasmussen.
Trump named former Wisconsin
sunrise.
Congressman turned Fox
Aaron
business
Faragone,
host Sean Duffy
pointed it out.
To be Secretary
we're
of Transportation. Meanwhile, controversy
window,
continues over Trump's pick for Attorney General,
east.
Former Florida Congressman
the
Matt
entire
Gaetz.
Sky is lit up.
Attorney Joe Leppard.
It's almost orange-like. It's just beautiful.
They were paid to have sex with Gaetz at a party in Orlando, Florida.
Meanwhile,
in
thanks, Larry. I'm just
appreciate
one woman
it.
Testified
just
to keep she it witnessed even. Gaetz having sex with a minor.
We've
she
got Thanksgiving next week
she had
and big-time travel plans.
Gaetz,
joining us,
within minutes
Jim
of
Garrity,
her arrival.
Director of Public
Later
Affairs.
On, when she was walking
one
out
of our
the pool
former
area,
team
she
members here.
Right,
Jim, how you doing?
Representative Gaetz
trying to keep
friend,
it real myself. How you doing, Larry?
That's what you do. I know. How long you been with AAA?
No charges being filed.
We're coming up on 9 years.
Gaetz has denied any wrongdoing.
It is a horrible allegation, and it is a lie.
Well, two sources tell CBS News the House Ethics Committee is expected to meet tomorrow amid growing calls
Americans
to make the report on its Gaetz investigation
over the
public.
You've got
a bipartisan group of senators who have asked to see it.
Next
it's obviously
next
relevant
Monday.
To the vote that they'll take with respect
yeah, how about
to confirmation.
That? Starting Tuesday, you're going to see people who are hitting the road.
Also this morning, a source close to the transition
really
tells CBS News Trump's team is considering executive orders in the first days of his administration to make sure his mass deportation plan can withstand any legal challenge.
For Thanksgiving, and Thanksgiving
and
is a great time of the week because a lot of people are already in place, so the traffic is a little bit lower. And then, you know, you'll have some more traffic over the next couple of days, and then Sunday, everyone's coming home all at once. So it's going to be very, very busy. We're expecting a record-setting amount of people who are going to be on the road. So just think about the last couple of Thanksgiving and add a bunch more people.
Jared
oh, Jim, this is going to be something to behold. I know that I'm going to make a quick road trip down to the Washington, D.C. area on Friday and come back on Sunday, and I'm wondering just how much traffic I'll be dealing with the week before.
Yeah, especially, you know, Paul, especially when you get to those larger metros and populated areas like that, you could be looking at more traffic. But here's what I'd say to anyone listening. Like, even if you're not going to big cities, around big cities, you're still best off giving yourself extra time out the door because there's going to be something around 72 million people on the roads. In our region alone, a couple million people are going to be out traveling. So even if you're going somewhere rural, I would still give yourself that extra hour. That's going to put you in a better position in many ways because, number one, you're not going to be stressed behind the wheel. I mean, hey, guys, it's a stressful holiday enough, right? We don't need to add more stress by running late. And then when you're running late behind the wheel, that puts you in this position where your judgment's clouded. Then you're more likely to engage in things like road rage. Just give yourself an extra hour no matter where you're going. I mean, worst case scenario, you're going to get to where you were going when you wanted to get there. Best case scenario, you'll get there early.
Yeah, and you're looking at worst travel times next Monday through Wednesday at 1 to 5 p.m. Best time, get on the road before 11 or before 10 on Tuesday and Wednesday. And I also was interested in the top 10 destinations for Thanksgiving, and I guess it's no surprise. Number one is Orlando, Florida, with Disney and all the amenities there and moving south to a little warmer weather.
Yeah, it's so the number one flight destination out of Pittsburgh is pretty consistently Orlando. Like you said, the parks. It's also not just that's kind of a gateway to a lot of your cruise ports down there. And this is most, for the most part, Thanksgiving is a it's an over the river and through the woods type of a holiday with people driving. For the intents of this survey that AAA does, it's 50 miles or more from home. But there are still people you see who will take advantage of those couple days off and turn it into a vacation. An interesting trend that we've seen growing over the past couple of years at AAA is people who say they're going to go on a cruise ship for Thanksgiving, and they're trying out a new tradition, right? They're going to have Thanksgiving dinner on a cruise ship at sea. And the people I've heard who go on them, they love them. They say it's a great time. So, yeah, there are people who are trying some new things, it seems.
Yeah, that's not original, though, Jim, because didn't the Pilgrims come over on the Mayflower? They were already on a ship.
I didn't even think of that. Now you're putting me back in school.
I mean, what we're looking at here, if I've got my numbers right, roughly one in three Americans is going to be traveling somewhere during that period of time.
50 roughly. Miles or more, yeah.
Yeah, roughly. That's about right. And that's when we go back, and AAA has been running these numbers going back to the early 2000s, it is a record-setting amount of people. It seems to be the case that a lot of that is just enthusiasm. A lot of that is, you know, hey, maybe I haven't seen somebody that I typically see on Thanksgiving for a couple years. Getting back to making those memories, getting back to seeing those friends. I think it's exciting. It's just like you know, what we're really trying to get the word out at AAA is it is exciting, but make sure you're doing what you have to do to stay safe, especially with people who are going to be working at the roadside. You know, tow truck drivers out there, tens of thousands of them who are going to be helping people. Police, fire, EMT, make sure you're moving over. And if you can't move over, you're slowing down so that those people can be safe. I'd also, hey, that day before Thanksgiving, that Wednesday, that's, of course, a big drinking holiday. So make sure you're doing what you have to do on that day to stay safe behind the wheel and not drive impaired.
Especially late at night on Wednesday night going into Thursday.
Yeah, and like that's so it's the unofficial, everyone's back in town, let's meet at the bar or, you know, meet at someone's house, have a couple of drinks, which nothing wrong with that, right? Like meeting up with old friends and catching up. But what we really want people to do is, you know, you need to have the plan for how you're getting home in place before you leave. And that means you're not sitting at the bar wondering, oh, how am I going to get home? And then after a couple of drinks, your judgment's clouded. That's when you see people who say, I can make the drive. I'm good. I can drive. And in reality, you shouldn't be anywhere behind the wheel of a car. So in all seriousness, like make that plan before you go out. Too often when it comes to impaired crashes, going back to the slow down, move over crashes, these are things that are generally entirely preventable. And it's on us to make sure we're doing what we can to keep other people on the road safe.
And one of the best values you can get is being a AAA member. East Central, Jim Garrity, Director of Public Affairs. Jim, have a great holiday, and thanks for taking some time today.
Yeah, sure. And Paul, you said Washington, D.C. That's fun.
Yeah, I'm actually at the D.C. suburbs up in Maryland. I have some friends there. We'll go to a ball game and hang around for a while. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, something to be thankful for.
You got it. All right, Jim. Thank you, brother.
Bye.
Tuesday at this time, we check in with another medical professional brought to you by Independence Health System, Expert Care here. And today, happy to introduce you to Erica Schaefer, who's Vice President of Post-Acute Services and Ambulatory Strategy. Erica, good to see you via our video on our live stream at kdkradio.com. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me this morning. I'm excited to be here.
For more than 20 years, you have an extensive professional background in operations and business development. You're a native of Westmoreland County, and you serve on the boards of American Red Cross and American Healthcare Executives. Who's your friend there barking?
Unfortunately, it's my dog. I'm home with my son who has a concussion.
Oh, no. What's your dog's name?
Lucy.
All right, Lucy. It's totally cool. We actually welcome pets on this show. Meanwhile, let's talk about what exactly it is you do. How do patients and families of patients know which type of care best fits their needs? That's really where you come in to help people go through that process.
Sure. Yes. I've been with home health and hospice for about 13 years now. And home health is, I would say, a benefit to the majority of individuals who are struggling to be able to leave their home in order to receive medical care, such as skilled nursing care. They're able to provide feeding therapy and nutritional guidance. We also do baby wellness visits with, you know, new moms, which is great to offer that extra support. We have a multidisciplinary team that works with our skilled nursing, but the other services that our skilled nurses offer is medication management, education, wound care, you name it. We're pretty much in there and able to offer them help. Our main goal from a skilled nursing nursing perspective is to really be able to help them remain independent as long as possible within their home.
And I understand this is really a growing part of the healthcare field. And your services also include multiple discipline therapies. What are you able to tell us about some of the therapies that you offer?
Sure, absolutely. The multidisciplinary team includes physical therapists. They help restore movement and functionality to patients who maybe are just recovering from, say, a knee replacement, joint replacement. We also have occupational therapy, which they do home safety assessments to make sure patients can maintain their safety within the home. Speech therapy, which is a really key component to the therapy, helping with swallowing exercises. It improves how they're able to eat, reintroduce to foods, you know, potentially after a stroke. And I would be remiss if I didn't mention our home health aides. They offer personal, you know, assistance to patients with bathing and hygiene and other things so they can maintain their dignity and independence while being at home.
And you also offer medical social services. Outline how these services work and to help the patients individually.
Absolutely. So our medical social services, they're really key into trying to coordinate extra community resources to patients. For example, if, you know, maybe they're in need of food on an ongoing basis or financial assistance or what programs are available to them. So they're able to really be able to continue their healing journey once home health is out of the home.
And I would imagine there are other services too. You mentioned hospice, special hospice programs. I really have a soft spot in my heart for people to work in this world in particular. What are some of the programs in the hospice arena?
Absolutely. So hospice is near and dear to my heart as well. That's actually why I got into the medical profession, was just seeing that side of it. So hospice offers a lot of opportunities for patients to decide that they just want to no longer seek medical treatment. We work in conjunction with our medical director, Dr. DeCola. We work through symptom management, pain management, some physical support. We offer special programs through our volunteer services, which volunteers actually, historically, that's what hospice was built on, was by volunteers historically. And actually 5% of the care that's provided to hospice patients is still regulated in the United States, which I think is really interesting. But our hospice program, we do a lot of special programming, from veteran programming, art expressions, our Bear Buddy programs, and birthday cakes. We do a lot of things making sure that we not only take care of the patient, but take care of the family. And the family is a real key component to being able to provide that care within the home and allow patients to pass where they prefer to pass, which is ideally in their home setting.
Yeah, I know that that's so important to so many. And also the fact that this, again, is an expanding healthcare opportunity in home. Well, Erica, thanks for taking time. We appreciate it. And we'll see you soon.
All right. That sounds great. Thanks for everything. And I will talk to you soon.
Erica Schaefer, Vice President of Post-Acute Services and Ambulatory Strategy at Independence Health System, expert care here. Saw my old friend Barry Pintar on KDK TV doing a story. At first, I saw Macy's, and I'm like, what's going on with Macy's? And then he teased us by saying there's a new department store in town. That's pretty rare. And Barry joins us, being a TV guy, via video. You can see him on the radio at KDKRadio.com on our live stream. Barry, good morning.
Hey, good morning. How are you, Larry?
I like your faux background. You got a little fire going and looks comfy, cozy as you get ready to come downtown to work. How you been
doing?
It's
a real background, Larry. Come on, cut me some slack.
Is that real? Wow.
That is real. That's, yeah. I'm still at home. I don't go in till like 9, 10. So, yeah.
No, I got you. So let's start with Macy's. Over the last few years, they've started to close some stores. And yeah. How are we doing in the Pittsburgh region? Because Macy's has pretty big footprint.
Yeah, so they announced in February of this year that they were going to be closing 150 more stores. You know, the big mystery is where and how. In terms of the Pittsburgh story, okay, so they had also announced back in 2021 that they were closing stores, and it takes them a while to release these numbers and close them. You know, they don't usually wait till the last minute because the last thing they want is for people not to show up. In 2021, not one of those stores were in Pennsylvania. Okay, so now we're in 2024. We're in February. They're going to announce they're going to close 150 more. No word yet, but they're saying by the end of this year. But I got to tell you, Larry, and I think you know this as well as I do, Pittsburgh actually, I think, is unique in that we kind of have a love affair with our department stores because we have such a great history of, you know, the Kaufmans and the Gimbels and the Horns. And I've talked to you about this before. Even the magicalness of this season when you would broadcast from those stores for KDKA and everyone tuned in. We love our stores. We loved our downtown, but we love our malls and we love shopping. So, I don't know that there are going to be any in Pennsylvania, let alone Pittsburgh. I can tell you, though, as of now, nothing announced other than by the end of this year, some of those stores are supposed to start closing.
We're with Barry Pintar, KDKA-TV. So that said, it's really rare that we hear about a brand new, and for most people, a name they've never heard, brand new department store opening here.
Yeah, hugely new, hugely rare. Again, as someone who works in television news, all I do is report about stores that are going to close. Look, we're talking right now about Big Lots, Advanced Auto, all these stores that are filing Chapter 11 or that are going to close. We just don't hear about new stores growing. So what are we talking about? We're talking about a store named Von Maur, based out of Iowa. Pittsburgh is now its 38th store. It's 150 years old. It's a fourth generation. And see, here's where I think the key is, Larry. Family-owned store. You know, I think we've seen enough of the Hallmark movies and even just enough of the Christmas movies about the board of directors. They just want profits and they'll do anything to do to get profits and then they'll run into the ground. And yet we hear about businesses that are family owned that are run in an entirely different way. So Von Maur is a family owned store from Iowa, 150 years old, growing, already announcing openings for next year. And all of a sudden we hear very specifically that they're moving into South Hills Village, the old Sears space that was empty for 50 years, Sears, JC's, Penney, same story we've heard over and over again. So they had their grand opening there last weekend. And I got to tell you, it seems to be going great because when I walked in yesterday with my a photojournalist, the first thing I wanted to see just as a reporter, are these looky-loos? Are people just walking around looking at the new store? Or are they shopping and buying? I was really surprised to see how many people were walking around with bags, with purchases, in line to check out. So far, I have to say, they're excited to be here, and it seems to be going really well. So yeah, it's a huge rarity. But we have a brand new major chain department store that has moved into Pittsburgh and it seems to have a very good future.
Von Maur. So what is best? Could you compare them to Macy's or the old Kaufman's, Gimbel's, Horns? Or what is their thing? Or is it more like a Kohl's or one of those TJ Maxx kind of setups?
Yeah, I love that question because that was the first question I had. And again, was pretty surprised. So when I walk in, the first thing I did, other than just kind of scan it with my eyeballs as I went up to price tags and how much is this shirt, men's shirt, how much is this woman's sweater, how much is this jacket? If I had to compare it, I would say it's a unique blend of a Macy's that carries Nordstrom-like product. You know, so much of the success of a store is not only where they are, if they're an anchor, and we can talk about what an anchor store is and how important that is to a mall, but who they have a retail relationship with. So, for example, if you saw this, I think you saw the story I did yesterday on the news, and I ended with this because I was surprised. They carry, for example, Louis Vuitton, if I'm going to use the correct pronunciation. So, and right next to that, since you're impressed, Yves Saint Laurent, which I guess is a little above Louis Vuitton. So they're carrying these multi-thousand dollar handbags or purses or men's wallets as well. But yet, again, if you saw the piece, I went downstairs and I just went to their sales rack and saw a really nice woman's fleece sweatshirt. It was $24. So they seem to have this unique blend. And by the way, it's a very well-loved brand. I know I sound like I'm doing a commercial. I don't mean that. But Newsweek magazine polled its readers and polled thousands of them for the last 3 years and said, what is the number one department store in America? And they picked this store,
really?
Von Maur.
Number
yes.
one.
And I, now the number one department store over Macy's, all of them. And I really suspect because it really does have kind of a unique blend. But again, going back to that family thing, I didn't feel, looking at their price tags, that I was being soaked or overcharged. So for someone looking for a brick and mortar, a whole other discussion compared to online, I found their prices extremely fair, and I found it a very good, unique blend of types of product that just about anyone who walks into that store can afford. The average guy is going to be able to afford a $24 hoodie. The rich woman from South Hills or Fox Chapel may want to go to the Louis Vuitton bags. So seems to have something for everyone. And people were buying. See, that's the key. They weren't looking around and just, you know, let's go shopping. They had shopping bags, and we saw a lot of that.
Von Maur department store.
V-O-N-M-A-U-R, correct.
South Hills Village, Barry Pintar, KDK TV, heading into work to stun us with another story later today. Barry, I appreciate you jumping on with us this morning. Thank you.
Always a pleasure, my friend. We'll see you next time.
Au revoir. That means goodbye. With Paul Rasmussen next, we're going to talk live with Rocky Blyer. And Paul, I mentioned what the Pittsburgh Steelers did with their salute to service on Sunday. In halftime, they debuted a new song written in part with Rocky about his service.
Man, what an powerful message in that song.
And I shared that with a lot of people yesterday, and they had the same response I did in the moment. And, you know, think about Rocky, this guy, captain of the Notre Dame football team, which is a big deal. They won a national championship. He's drafted in 1968 by the Steelers. In the same year, he's drafted by Uncle Sam. He ends up going to Vietnam, obviously, is wounded. Doesn't look like he'll be able to walk normally again, let alone play football, and then win 4 Super Bowls. But several years ago, and I'll ask him about this, he went back to Vietnam, to the same spot where he was wounded.
No, that's a piece of video I'll never forget seeing.
It's actually, if you want to search it, ESPN did a documentary about that journey, and he said, you know, he passed out, and he thought he had worked through his post service because he got a lot of attention, he said.
So he was back at that spot where he was injured,
the exact spot.
Yep.
And there was a guy on a little motorbike watching when they were filming this, and it turned out that guy was one of their locals who was helping the Americans, you know, like a scout.
Mm-hmm.
What are the odds of that? The guy was still there, but he
this
said
this is
what
the
hit
Big K Morning Show. Larry Richard
loss.
and
the
Rocky
song
Blyer
is about
will join us.
The names you
right
don't
after
know.
The news mm-hmm. at
like
9.
He says, "Yeah, I
want to
talk to him about the song that they premiered
that."
And then when
halftime at the Steelers game on Sunday
he realized
had an impact,
I got a ways to go.
Also in attendance, Pittsburgh Mayor
deflect.
the attention
we've
he
got
gets on to.
I can't believe you actually
that you don't
got
know
you
and you're going to
in studio here,
hear from
Mayor.
Rocky. Blair,
hey, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Coming
Ed
Gainey
up.
Is
going
here,
back to that to moment in Vietnam. I just
members.
The Absolutely. Words that come to mind are there. Are,
Jake,
there are no coincidences.
You.
How do you
unbelievable?
Like, your role.
It's been a wild ride for the last 3 years, but you know, Mayor Gainey's a great guy to work for.
So we appreciate you coming in. By the way, I do want to mention what the Steelers did for our veterans. Salute the service.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And they do recognize our military, you know, every game. Mm. But yes, Sunday was really special because of the number of servicemen and women in attendance. And as you know, this region, this city, one of the highest per capita of veteran communities around the country.
Yes, yes. It was wonderful. It was a great event, great event. And I also want to give a shout-out to my colleagues, Senator Jay Costa, Senator Wayne Fontana, for also the ceremony that they did over there as well. I thought it was well done, a lot of class, quality. I just want to tell them thank you for their services as well.
Outstanding. So one of the reasons we wanted to talk to you is you just talked about the budget, the city. I mean, in a way, I've noticed even since the announcement that the NFL draft was coming in April 2, 2026, there seems to be a new energy about looking at, you know, reimagining the city of Pittsburgh downtown. Let's start there.
Well, you know, Larry, we've been working on this for 2 years. We have been convening in my office every Wednesday, myself, the Allegheny Conference on Community Economic Development, Stephanie Pashman, as well as County Exec Sarah Annamorato, URA. So we've all been convening for the last two years in my office to really discuss how we reimagine downtown. Once we stabilized a lot of the efforts that we put in motion, from the Clean Streets team to the Ambassadors Program by Pittsburgh Downtown Partnership, we really wanted to talk about that. We understood that the 9-to-5 Monday through Friday, you know, work commuter model was over. It was over. And we had to start planning what the future would look like. And so we met every Wednesday at 8 a.m. For the last 2 years to put this together. Once we put the plan together, we took the plan to Harrisburg. And we were fortunate enough to have Governor Shapiro adopt the plan as well as come through with $660 million over 10 years to reimagine and reinvent, redevelop downtown. So that's what we've been saying from day one. One is that we knew that we had to stabilize downtown first. Want to thank PNC Bank, Bill Demchak, for helping us with the Public Safety Center, getting that together so that our police would have somewhere to go. I believe Acting Chief Ragland has done an incredible job of ensuring that we got three units of police down there all night. So when we seen the cultural district come back, the crowd is back at the cultural district. Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, it's very difficult to get reservations downtown to a restaurant. All those things was positive signs that we were moving in the right direction. Crime is down. We haven't seen a homicide downtown in 22 months. Everything that we came into that we experienced, we've improved when it came to the quality of living downtown. Now we got, I think, 7 conversions right now that we'll be doing downtown. A third of what we will be doing will be affordable housing downtown. So as we talked about making downtown a neighborhood, we're moving in that direction. We said it before, there's no microwave meals in development, but there is quality work and the quality work we've put in. And just from a budgetary item, my deputy mayor has done an incredible job of ensuring that the numbers that we put out match the development that we have to do downtown. Jake, why don't you talk a little bit about the budget for downtown?
Sure, Mayor. So to take a step back to some of what you were talking about, right? As the pandemic ended, which was right about the shutdown portion of it ended right about the same time you took office, right? There were two big changes that implied for downtown, right? One was as the nature of the way people go into the office changed, we were seeing fewer people there, right? You know, at the very early stages, a lot fewer people when everyone was still remote, but that was a gradual process. And as there were fewer people there, you know, two things happened. One, the businesses there started sort of pulling back their footprint, renting smaller offices, selling off some of their buildings. That put pressure on the real estate prices there, which translate into our revenue. And on the second hand, you know, with fewer people there, the kind of ratio of commuters to other folks who use downtown, whether they're coming in by bus to access services, or we certainly saw a huge spike in homeless people during the pandemic caused by the economic consequences of the pandemic. And a lot of the services are downtown, so a lot of them concentrated downtown. And that led to kind of an unstable situation. You know, perceptions of safety had fallen, and there were fewer eyes on the street, less money being generated in the businesses. So we had to tackle both of those challenges kind of at the same time. You talked about efforts around public safety, both with the police and with our alternative response team, social workers, that had amazing success in addressing some of the behavioral and psychological health needs. But we needed this reinvestment strategy. And downtown Pittsburgh, among similarly sized cities, is a really unique standout for how little residential development there is downtown. You know, in a city with 90 neighborhoods, all of which are pretty close, it's been pretty easy to live close to downtown and commute in. So we needed to begin flipping that. And that's what the investments that you and the governor and others announced around conversion projects are going to help us do, which is get more people living in town to stabilize that market. And that's going to have a positive impact on our city moving forward, generally, you know, city government's revenues and just the health of the community.
I want to ask you more about that plan, because obviously people on the streets in this city compared to a lot of other cities, it's increased from memory over the course of COVID to now, but not nearly the issue they have in other big cities, but it's still an issue that you're addressing, and having places for people to go will be important. So we'll talk more about that. We're with Pittsburgh Mayor Ed Ganey. Jake Pollock is the Deputy Mayor and Director of Office of Management and Budget here in the city. Appreciate you gentlemen being here this morning. Pittsburgh Mayor Ed Ganey and Deputy Mayor Jake Pollock in studio. And Mayor, you said you were at the Steelers game. Paul Rasmussen just mentioned Paul Skeens getting the National League Rookie of the Year award. That's great for the city, too.
Great for the city and well-deserved to Paul. Paul had a phenomenal year. I mean, he was the bright spot to me in regards to really saying, hey, look, you know, hopefully we're building something for the future.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's not over yet. He may has a chance tomorrow, maybe be a Cy Young Award winner, too. So Good for Paul Skeens and the Pittsburgh
Pirates.
That would
be great. That would be great. Wow.
By the way, if you can find that rookie card that he autographed that everybody's looking for, some people are offering. Have you heard about this, Jake?
No.
They offered the Pirates.
Yeah.
If anybody finds Paul Skeens' rookie card that's autographed for this top series that's out there, they're going to give him two tickets behind home plate for 30 years.
Ow.
All this other gear, you know, shirts, autographs, a meet and greet. And then his girlfriend, Libby Dunn, said, you can watch a game with her in the suite, all this crazy stuff. People are offering like $250,000 for it. Yeah. So if you find that, it's like the old movie,
wow,
Golden Ticket, right, with Willy Wonka. Meanwhile, there's no golden ticket when it comes to running a city. Mm-mm. So talk about dealing with the unhoused or homeless and the plan to bring more people as residents into the city and keeping a portion of housing affordable.
Yeah, when we came into office, downtown was what we called on fire. It was something that we had to address. And so building the right coalition of stakeholders to be able to deal with how we discuss redevelopment of downtown. And one of those stakeholders was our county partner, the Department of Health and Human Services. And I want to give a shout out to Erin Dalton as well. She's done a phenomenal job, an incredible job working with us. And everything was going real good, and then Second Avenue burnt down. And we had to make some adjustments in order to be able to serve our unsheltered population in a way that still was dignified. Now that it's opened back up, we don't have no more encampment sites downtown. There's no encampment sites at all downtown, as there were. All of them are gone, and we're beginning to move people off the trails.
I mean, that's news.
Yeah. Yeah, we don't have no more encampment sites. We had one, and I was on First. And that's gone. So we're moving people into housing that's respectable and dignified, such as Second Ave Commons, now that's open back up, which is great because it's getting people the treatment that they rightfully deserve. Secondly, is we're starting to move people off the trails now back into Second Commons as well. We're still more aggressive in the market of getting transitional housing so that we can move people into transitional housing. We got a couple. Projects in the key right now that's ready to go. But the reality is to always make sure that we produce safe, reliable, and affordable housing for everybody. And even when we talk about affordable housing, you know, like I said, you heard us talk about the conversion projects that we're doing downtown, the 7 that we're doing. We also got 12 low-income tax credit deals from the state for affordable housing. So when you talk about affordable housing, 12 and 2 funding cycles is unprecedented to be able to get. And we've already started to put that money into motion, that funding into motion from Homewood to Allentown in regards to housing projects that we're doing. We also will see the fruit of our labor when it comes to housing construction and the preservation, because for the first time ever in this city, we were able to go out and get an affordable housing bond in order to build more construction and more and preserve more affordable housing. So we're moving in that market too. So we've done a lot to improve a lot of what we're doing. 1,000 units, we got 1,000 units either being voted on or up or prepared to be on voted on at the URA to move affordable housing forward. So we've done a lot to be able to ensure that as we also take care of our shelter, that we're creating more housing because we want to stabilize the city. And in order to stabilize the city, we have to do more affordable housing. And I think from a URA standpoint, we got a couple more projects that we're doing too. Is that correct?
Yeah. So there's all told 2,000 units of affordable housing moving, you know, at some level of either having opened in the past couple of years, under construction, or financed right now. And that's not, not looking at the ones that are still coming. You know, behind those 7 projects downtown that are advancing right now, there are another dozen or so, right, that are still developing their financing, but all of which will include some component of affordability. And that's really key, Larry, because the biggest challenge in finding, you know, housing for unsheltered folks that we discovered early on, right, is that there were a lot of shelter options, but nowhere for folks to go when they had been able to stabilize their lives at that level to move on. And so they stayed put for quite a while, and that meant that there was no spots open for folks that were presently on the street to come in. We're now starting to see more of that that throughput, right? People can come in, get access services, stabilize their lives, and then move on to something else. And then we can, bring more folks inside. That plus more shelter options is what allowing us to reduce the amount of encamped folks all over the city.
What? And reinvestment too. I mean, we start to reinvest it in our neighborhoods as well. I mean, the $50 million we got from the Housing Urban and Redevelopment HUD in order to do Bedford Dwellings, where nobody will be displaced. We got 411 units of replacement housing. We'll have another 211 of affordable housing and 202 of market rate in the Hill District. So you're talking about a whole different community as we build more housing. And that's what we meant by coming in and making sure we are reimagining the city as a whole, not just the downtown area, but also our neighborhoods. We know that in order to stabilize the city, housing is important and affordable is critical for us to be able to get to where we want to get to.
What can we do with the abandoned houses? In some cases, you have a neighborhood where, you know, people are trying to keep their neighborhood up, and then you got a house that's just sitting mm-hmm. there. Either it should be or is condemned and still sitting there, or could be renovated to, you know, increase the tax rolls and give somebody an affordable place to live.
So a lot of it is, you know, is in our zoning package. We introduced a bold and ambitious zoning package in order to make creating more housing more affordable. And I know you work diligently on that. Let's talk about our zoning package and how that'll have an impact in neighborhoods.
Yeah. So, the city of Pittsburgh zoning code was adopted in the 60s, right? And it's a product of that time. There are a lot of things that we used to build a lot of in Pittsburgh, duplexes, even triplexes, right, that aren't allowable in that code anymore. And a lot of types of housing that are common in our city, but that, you know, the rules that we adopted at that time don't permit. So the package is meant to sort of get out of the way, of the market for building housing and get rid of some of those restrictive rules, eliminate the requirement for building parking, allowing folks to build ADUs, to open things up, and then also requiring set asides for affordability. That would allow us to take advantage of that land that you're talking about, those houses that aren't maintained. I mean, at the end of the day, we were built for 700,000 people and have 300,000 now. So There's a backlog, right, of those abandoned structures that we need to address. We're getting faster at dealing with that and have more tools than we ever had. You know, the land bank was one of those tools. When Mayor Ganey took office, it hadn't moved a single property. Now it's over 150. So we're sort of coming at it from all angles.
And when we discuss how the land bank, just so that the listeners out there can understand the land bank, how it was established and what it was meant to do.
It's meant to take properties, you know, that have what's called tangled title. Basically, you know, we ended up, the public ends up owning them because they've been abandoned. But we don't have clear title to the property
to actually do anything with
right.
it. So it ends up being in limbo.
Correct. Which a lot of these properties that you're talking
right.
about
are in limbo.
Right, right. So this is how we, one of the ways that we're addressing that situation.
All right, we'll have more. Pittsburgh Mayor Ed Ganey, Deputy Mayor Jake Pollock here on the Big K Morning Show. Big K Morning Show, Larry Richard with, in studio, Pittsburgh Mayor Ed Ganey, Jake Pollock, Deputy Mayor. Appreciate you guys coming in, along with an old colleague, Olga George, from KDK TV back in the day, working with you. Is she doing all right?
She's doing fantastic job.
Okay.
Fantastic.
Just check it. Just check.
You know, also want to, you know, just take a moment to, you know, Elaine Effort and her family. God bless them. We lost a trailblazer.
Absolutely.
Her funeral was yesterday, and it was, God bless the family.
Hear, hear. Appreciate it. And somebody like that, I think of like Lynn Hayes, Pre-Lynn, and the people in this community that worked so hard over the years and contributed in a big way. Let's talk about safety in the city. You've heard a lot about that.
Mm-hmm.
It's not safe downtown.
Mm-hmm.
And now with Chief Larry Scarrato choosing a life as a referee in college basketball. By the way, personally, I really liked Larry, and I thought he did a good job. But obviously, he made a choice to do that. What's the game plan for the police department?
No, so for one, I'm very confident, very, very confident and comfortable with Acting Chief Ragland. Very comfortable and confident. He ran operations. He understood exactly where we were going to go. Shout out to Chief Scarrato, though. Incredible job he did. You know, when I came in, we had 71 homicides. And now we are down 30% when it comes to homicides in this city, 45% when we talk about non-fatal shootings and homicides. We are, compared to when I came in, we are less. So when you think about when I came in, the year before I came in, we have reduced it by that much, which is amazing when we talk about reducing homicides and non-fatal shootings. And so I want to make sure that I lift Larry up in that, and also Chief Ragland, Acting Chief Ragland. You know, to be down 45% speaks volumes of what our police officers have done. And I'm very thankful for our police officers and the level of services that they put in. And they've done an incredible job. And I just want to thank them, because whenever you talk about a city of our size being down 45% in homicides and non-fatal shootings, that comes from a great relationship with the police and our community. Let me also talk about our community in the mind. We got more calls on things that's going on now than ever before that I can imagine. And when you talk to the Chief Scarrato or Acting Chief Ragland, they will tell you that people are calling in saying what's going on. And that helps, because that means we're being more preventive and we're intervening in a way that that makes sure that we're creating the public safety that protects life. So, you know, from a public safety standpoint, we're doing exactly what we said we were going to do. We said we would be focused on driving homicides and non-fatal shootings down. And to be down by 45% speaks volumes.
And you can feel it, too. I mean, we just brought on our biggest class of police recruits since the academy reopened. Over 40 folks entering the academy, all highly qualified. There's a real energy and a desire, right, among Pittsburghers to protect and serve and to take on that profession that we hadn't seen in a while. I think when you look at existing officers and morale, when you look at the results on the street, you know, when you look at folks looking to join, I think there's a strong sense, you know, that this is a police bureau on the move with quality leadership and, you know, and an active, you know, posture.
Let me say, you know, to have a class of 42 right now, when it has been, and everybody's experienced this, even when I go to other cities and talk to other mayors recruiting or police officers, to have a class of 42 speaks volumes in our efforts to really outreach in a way that gets people to want to come into law enforcement. We know that that's been a challenge nationally. So to have our biggest class of 42 officers.
I mean, that's the biggest class in a long time,
In a long time.
And the challenge is for having enough police officers. Do you feel like you have enough?
Well, we balance. I mean, we budgeted for 800 police officers this year. And we believe we're getting there. We believe we're getting there. We went through 2 years of, before we took office, we went 2 years without hiring no police for various reasons. You know, that's what we came into. When we came in, we opened up the police academy. From opening up the police academy and getting it ready, we started recruiting immediately. We went around to every zone to talk to every, from zone one to zone six, to talk to police about what they need. And the two things that they said they needed was a contract where they would see a pay increase, and they needed more police officers to join the force, more people to join the police force. And we worked diligently on that. And I think you can see the fruit of that labor. As we just discussed, we just have our highest class of 42 officers. So everything that we did, we've done strategically to ensure that we're building, not just, you know, doing things for the sake of doing it, but actually things that's going to be everlasting and have change in the city that we want to see.
Do you,
I think we, on the budget side, but the 800, why don't we talk about that real quick?
Yeah, so we, as the mayor said, we budgeted for 800 officers, which would be the highest we've been since the pandemic. You know, we also have, between last year's budget and this year's budget, it will have budgeted for close to 30 new civilian positions in the police bureau. These are tasks, right, that for many years we've been having sworn officers in uniform, you know, having gone through the academy and all the certification process doing, that are purely administrative, you know, managing evidence, moving in and out of the evidence room, answering phones at the front desk at the zone stations, you know, watching the cameras at the real-time crime center. We don't need police officers to be doing a lot of these tasks. And so we're tying up officer time in these administrative functions that we don't need to. So by hiring civilians, you know, we can put the real most valuable resource of the police bureau, which is those officers, back into investigations or patrol functions. And those are some of the big investments we've been making, not just through the academy to bring our numbers back up, but also to make the best use of the officers that we have.
And also with public safety, our bridges. You know, when we came in 3 weeks on the job, Fern Hollow Bridge collapsed, and we made a promise to the city that we would not have another bridge collapse. And now we have no bridges in poor condition. I mean, in felon condition. Every bridge we have is, and we got some in poor condition, but we don't have none in felon condition. So we stayed true to that. And I know that we've had to close some bridges like the Panther Hollow Bridge recently.
You get hollered after that.
Yeah, but listen, I'd rather get hollered at than ever wake up again and see a bridge collapse. We were fortunate that we didn't have no fatalities. And at the end of the day, I don't ever want to wake up to that again. That was a Amen. Nightmare. And so when we see that we have to close a bridge for public safety due to the safety of our citizens, our residents, we're going to do that. But the reality is, you know, from when I came into right now, to be able to report to you that we have no bridges in felon condition is amazing.
In our final minute, you like this job? It comes with a lot of heat, Mayor. I don't have to tell you.
Well, I mean, you know, Larry, I'll be honest with you. Like, the heat is something I'm used to. I mean, I grew up in this city, so I understand this city. So for me, I mean, you think about it, I've felt the heat my whole life. So that's nothing new. There's always things that bother you, but I think the opportunity to get up and serve the people every single day in the city that I love, in the city that raised me, I couldn't be here today without this city. I mean, you know, my family's from the Hill. I'm from South Oakland, moved to East Liberty, went to Dilworth, went to Holy Rosary, 2 years of Central Catholic, graduated from Peabody. I know this city. I know the people of this city, and I love this city, and I love the people. And there's no greater satisfaction or gratification that I have than to get up every day and be able to serve, even in the midst of the challenges that we've had. I'll be honest, we've had some incredible challenges, but Larry, look what we've learned from it. We've learned and we've overcome a lot of them. I mean, to be able to say we're down in homicides, to be able to say that we got, you know, $50 million from the feds, to be able to do from HUD, to be able to do Bedford Dwellings, to talk about the investments that we're doing downtown, talk about how we're dealing with the unsheltered, to talk about the neighborhood development, what we're doing in the neighborhood, improving our police force, improving our fire. We've done a remarkable job of making a safe, welcoming, and a thriving city. And that's what I've envisioned when I took this job, is to create a direction in which we are moving forward and not backwards, and we're doing that. But Larry, let me be honest, it comes with a lot of work, so you're going to have to take some of the heat. If you can't take the heat, you shouldn't be in the kitchen. You got to be able to deal with the heat in order to improve the city you want to see grow.
Pittsburgh Mayor Ed Gainey, Deputy Mayor Jake Pollock, I appreciate you gentlemen being here this morning. Thank you for taking the time.
Thank you, Larry.
Thank you.
Make sure you check out The Drive at 5. Colin Dunlap every afternoon. The story is driving the news every day at 5 p.m. Brought to you by Service Master of Greater Pittsburgh. Demand the yellow van. Drive at 5, 100.1 FM, AM 1020, KDKA, and of course on our Odyssey app. Coming up, the great Rocky Blyer contributed to a song they debuted at halftime at the Steelers game for Salute to Service. I want to share what he had to say and what he had to do in helping make this possible next.